Don't talk, just listen. I'm sorry what I did to Compton. I couldn't help it. Don't know why I had to stab her. I am so upset about it. I keep getting drunk every night. I can't believe it. It's like a big dream. I can't think of being locked up. If I get locked up, I'd kill myself. I'd rather kill myself than get locked up. I'll try not to kill anybody else.
Play your emergency.
Please don't talk, just listen. I'm sorry I killed that girl. I stabbed her 40 times. Kimberly Compton was the first one. Oh, my chief. Oh, I don't know what's the matter with me. I'm sick. I'm going to kill myself, I think.
Where are you?
I'm just going to... If somebody dies with a red shirt on, it's me. I killed both of you. I'm sorry. I'll never make it to heaven.
Calm down.
Expert enough.
You find me, I just stabbed somebody with an ice pick. I can't stop myself. I keep killing somebody. Yes, please, this is an emergency. Please send a squad to Pierce Butler Road, Muhlenberg Manufacturing Company, Machine Shop. Please, there's an ambulance too. There's a girl hurt there.
Can you tell me what happened to her?
Just hurry, she's laying on the ground in the back by the railroad tracks, by the edge here.
What's the address?
I don't know.
Who are you?
Paul Michael Stefani was an American serial killer. He was also known as the Weepy Voice Killer due to a series of telephone calls he made to police, anonymously reporting his crimes in a remorseful and high-pitched voice.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony.
And this is Jay.
It's so good to be back and talk with everyone. I am working on that. I just caught myself going, I remember our last podcast, I kept saying, Remember we discussed that?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on not saying that. So you got any big plans or anything new going on with you, Jay?
No, I have like 2 months of classes left.
Oh, you're almost done. So
yeah.
That's a good thing. With myself, I'm a certified family peer specialist. So I have a presentation that I have to do at an event this weekend. So I'm kind of nervous about that. I've been working on it, but I'm also been working on not saying because I keep catching myself doing that. So that's something I'm working on. I know the last couple of weeks you were just shocked like the rest of everybody else about Nipsey and what happened with him.
Very, very sad.
Yeah, that was a shocker.
Right.
And it's just amazing when you find out all the things that he was so involved in.
Right.
Afterwards.
Makes it sadder.
He was so young and such a young family he has.
Right.
And I didn't know a whole lot about him, but I've been reading and talking with you about it. And they said that with Nipsey's passing, the person who took his life, the suspect who appeared to have done so, that he appears to be to have been envious of him, of Nipsey's success.
Mm-hmm.
And the definition of envy is a feeling of being discontented or resentful, a longing around. Longing and aroused by someone else's possessions.
Mm-hmm.
Like you want their possessions or their qualities or their luck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they said that suspect did to him. So I just did some research, like, what can you learn from that? That's what I always say, tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what can you learn from this? It was a tragic thing that happened, but what can you learn from it? And I thought one point was how to protect ourselves from being envious of other people. Because there is a difference between, a lot of people get that mixed up, being envious or jealous. Envy is wanting someone else's, what they have, their possessions or their qualities or something that they possess. And jealous is when you're worried someone else is trying to take what you have.
Oh, okay.
So how can you protect yourself from being envious of someone or even being jealous of someone?
Mm-hmm.
And I just had three quick things about how to protect yourself. And one way is to shift your focus to the goodness in your own life and remind yourself that nobody has it all.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing is generally celebrating the success of other people.
Because
we all have to protect ourselves from that. Because if you don't, as you can see, it could just go so far that you would go and take someone else's life like that.
In such a horrible way. And I saw this woman on Twitter, because I'm always on Twitter, and she lived in the same neighborhood that Nipsey was trying to help because he grew up there. And she said she would be at the grocery store with him, and she said he was always there, like in the neighborhood. He would visit like every day and help people out. I think also he bought all the, a bunch of the drug stores and convenience stores. He said so that, you know, the people in the neighborhood could work there. That way it would be for the neighborhood and stuff. Also, I was on Twitter, and this guy who bought some of Nipsey's clothes because he has, like, a clothing store, he said that if, with the text on the back, if you wave your phone over it, it plays a video.
No.
So they said he was very innovative with his fashion.
Wow.
And they said even, like, you have music videos, if you wave it over the phone, like, you are code or whatever for the words. Which is very interesting.
And wasn't he also getting the young people into technology,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, to make sure that, you know...
Like the coding part?
Yeah, because he was all about making sure that all the young Black people, you know, didn't go into crime or anything. So he thought technology would be a good thing. I think he even was involved in something where he would... like a museum or something, I think. Also, so he was very much about his community, which is very sad.
That is so sad. He was helping so many people. And this one person just came and this suspect just came and just took that. And the way he did it was just so violent. We all have to protect ourselves from that type of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Being envious or jealous of someone who is doing so well.
Right.
What can you learn from that person?
Mm-hmm.
Or why can't you just celebrate that person? Or if it's a friend, instead of being jealous, ask that friend, what can I do?
Right.
To help out. What can I do to be a blessing to you?
Exactly. Plus, he died trying to help someone because his friend just left jail, and then he went to help him get clothes and stuff, and they shot him. Although the only, well, not good thing, but the only thing I would say is he owned all the rights to his music. So if you play his music, his family gets the money from it, all the proceeds from it. So that's a good thing to do as well. For it, because he has kids. And then it's rumored that Lauren London is also pregnant.
Yeah, that's
so,
a rumor. That is,
I hope not. Well, I wouldn't say I hope not, but it's very sad if she is.
It's sad that she had to go through it without him, but she's bringing his child, another child of his, into the world.
Exactly.
So, and he left a legacy for his family.
Plus
so that's such a blessing.
His funeral will be held at the Staples Center as well in Los Angeles, which is fascinating because I think it's sold out in like 5 to 20 minutes. So that's cool.
Wow. So our deepest condolences go out to Nipsey's family.
Right.
Family, friends, all
associates,
that.
Associates. Also his community.
Yes, his community. Ah, that is just so powerful. Because I know I was on Instagram and someone said, look for people in your community that's like him.
Exactly.
And support them. And I thought, that is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
That is so powerful. But, so we want to send out our condolences to his family and friends and community. And then, but today you are the one talking about this case because I haven't heard it yet.
I've read a lot about it. I didn't realize it was in Minnesota, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah. So she's the one, Jay is the one who did the research. So I am listening to it just like you guys are.
Cool. So it's about the Weepy Voice Killer. The killer's actual name is Paul Michael Stefani, and he was born on September 8th, 1944, in Austin, Minnesota. So let's get into the actual killings. On December 31st, 1980, Stefani beat Karen Paltak in St. Paul, Minnesota, inflicting several wounds and a brain injury. Stefani himself called police at 3 a.m. to report the attack, directing...
So he attacked this woman and St. Paul. Where were they? I mean, what were the circumstances behind
that? I have no idea. I couldn't find the circumstances. Although she did survive.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
She's one of the survivors. There is, I think, 5 victims and 2 survived and then 3 died.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Okay.
But Stefani himself called police at 3 a.m. to report the attack, directing police to the location where, quote, there's a girl hurt there, end quote. His next victim was Kimberly Compton. Unfortunately, she did not survive.
Mm-hmm.
She was an 18-year-old student from Wisconsin, and on June 3rd, 1981, in St. Paul, after killing her, he again contacted police pleading, start quote, God, D, will you find me? I just stabbed someone with an ice pick. I can't stop myself. I keep killing somebody, end quote. 2 days later, he called police to say he was sorry for stabbing Compton and would turn himself in. He did not. On June 6th, he called to say...
So he was calling the police.
Mm-hmm.
Was it taunting them, or was it that he really was sorry afterwards?
I'll actually play the recordings as well at the beginning of this podcast. He would be crying, which is why they call him the Weepy Voice Killer, and asking them to please stop him.
Although, so, like, something was in him causing him to do this.
Exactly. Although, as many people said, if it was that way, he said he would turn himself in and he should have just did that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard. Because he went to jail anyway.
So yeah.
It's like, you could have just turned yourself
in. Instead of continually killing
people. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
He called on June 6th to say that the newspaper accounts of some of the murders weren't accurate. His next call...
He called to say that it was...
inaccurate, yes.
It's not like he wanted attention more so than being sorry.
I'm sorry. And his next call came June 11th. In a whimpering, barely confident voice, he cried, quote, I'm sorry for what I did to Compton, end quote. His next victim was Catherine Greening, who was found dead at her home just outside St. Paul. Stefani later confessed to drowning her in her bathtub at her Roseville residence. His fourth victim, and the last murder victim, fortunately, was Barbara Simmons, a 40-year-old nurse on the Minneapolis side of the Minneapolis River. The two met at the Hexagon Bar after Simmons gave Stefani an extra cigar. After spending the night at the bar with Stefani, Simmons told a waitress, quote, he's cute, I hope he's nice, since he's giving me a ride home, end quote. Simmons was found stabbed to death the next day. There were no calls after Greening's death, but the weepy voice killer contacted police after the murder of Simmons. Please don't talk, just listen, I'm sorry I killed that girl. I stabbed her 40 times. Kimberly Compton was the first one ever in Minnesota, end quote. So, onto the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
The serial killer contacted police so often, investigators found that felt there was an excellent opportunity someone would recognize his voice. On several occasions, media broadcast stations aired recordings of the phone calls from the Weepy Voice Killer. Police received over 150 calls from the public, but the recordings were so short and distorted with emotion that they failed to provide the identity of the murderer.
Yeah. See, that's the part that gets me,
mm-hmm.
is... they were hoping his voice would do it.
Yeah.
But he was in that bar all night.
Right.
And nobody...
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then the woman said, the last victim said that... there I go again. Said that I hope he's safe, basically.
Yeah.
And no one...
Mm-hmm.
Recognized him?
Although, it is worth noting that usually eyewitness testimony is, like, the worst testimony we can get. Because usually, what you see is different than what you remember. If that's you get what I'm saying.
And that's probably was his first time at that bar, too.
Yeah.
That's true.
And if you're a bartender, you see a lot.
Yeah, you do. You do.
And then several times, his phone calls were traced by emergency operators. Once to a bar near a bus station depot, and once to a downtown phone booth where police arrived and he was gone. On to his capture. So, Stefan picked up a 19-year-old prostitute named Denise Williams on August 21st, 1982 in Minneapolis. Williams sensed something was wrong when Stefani began driving through a dark suburban area rather than returning her back to the city where he originally picked her up. After turning onto a dead-end road, he stabbed her 15 times with a screwdriver. During the attack, Williams was able to hit Stefani on the head with a glass bottle, causing cuts to his head and face. Her scream drew the attention of a man who lived nearby, and upon seeing Stefani, tried to stab Williams again. Well, Stefani was trying to stab her again.
He saw the person.
Yeah. So the man began to wrestle with him, causing Stefani to flee the scene. The man was able to call for an ambulance and later help identify Stefani. However, when Stefani returned home to his apartment, he noticed he was bleeding badly and sought medical help. It was this call that confirmed Stefani was the Weepy Voice Killer and linked him to the Williams attack.
He sounded like a very, very, very selfish, self-centered.
Mm-hmm.
With all that crying.
He was just like...
He was just a horrible, self-centered, only cared about his... Oh, my goodness.
Further in-depth investigation work later connected Williams Stefani to the murder of Simmons. The trial. During Stefani's trial in the Simmons murder case, Stefani's ex-wife, sister, and a woman who lived with him testified they believed the historical caller revealing the attacks was in fact Stefani. Those observations alone were not enough to identify Stefani as a Weeping Voice killer, since the hysterical crying destroyed the voice. So, I think it's so funny that you classify that as hysterical.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just
just the fact that you're going to go out there and kill these people and then have the audacity to be on the phone crying. And then as soon as you get hurt, you mm-hmm. run into the
right.
hospital. But my question is, his ex-wife, sister,
and a woman he lived with
testified against mm-hmm. him.
Yeah.
Is he known to be, like, abusive? Was he any signs of domestic mm-hmm. abuse?
No, they just believe that the hysterical caller was in fact him based mm-hmm. on the voice, I think. Stefani was convicted of the Simmons murder and the attempted murder of Williams and was sentenced to 40 years. He died in prison in 1998 from cancer. Although he did additionally confess to other murders.
He did confess.
Yes. So in 1997, he was diagnosed with skin cancer and had less than a year to live. He decided to confess to the murders of Kim Compton, Barbara Simmons, and Kathy Greening. He had not been a suspect in the Greening death, as he had not made a phone call to police as he had in other cases. In all, he confessed to 1, a beating attack in 1980, 2, stabbing Kimberly Compton to death in 1981, 3, drowning Kathleen Greening in 1982, 4, stabbing Barbara Simmons to death in 1982, and 5, stabbing Denise Williams in 1982. The confession allowed police to officially connect Stefani to the phone calls.
And all of that was so personal. The stabbing, mm-hmm, the drowning was very personal.
Mm-hmm. I have a quote from Caroline Lowe. She's a local reporter who covered the Weeping Voice killing spree for WCCO mm-hmm. and also interviewed Stefani in prison. She stated, start quote, serial killers and rapists can look so ordinary. You think they're going to look like the bad guys from CSI, but you never know what you're going to face, end quote.
That's true. You mm-hmm. don't.
Very true. And that's the end.
Wow. Oh, he was a horrible person.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he did it. But like that news person said, they look normal. Yeah. Serial killers do. And going home with someone that you just met mm-hmm. is not, or letting people know where you live at mm-hmm. and you just met them.
Exactly.
It's not the thing to do. Not that I'm victim blaming mm-hmm. at all, but that is something to heed
right.
too.
Even if you get into like a Uber or something, because technically it's like something that you don't think, but a Uber, you're literally getting in a car with a stranger. They said, because a girl was recently murdered, because she thought that she was getting a Uber and there was someone else, but they said to ask the Uber who they're picking up.
See, when that case happened, I thought, doesn't Uber show you the car
yeah.
and the person, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes when I'm about to use an Uber, I'm still questioning, is it that person?
Right.
And the thing that got me was, sometimes they do have the sticker.
Mm-hmm.
Most Uber and Lyft have a sticker, but even imposters because, have the sticker also.
Right,
that's
actually,
scary.
It's funny. I got like a sticker pack from Amazon,
mm-hmm.
and I got like a Uber sticker that looks just like a Uber that you like attach. So like it's easy to just order a Uber sticker on Amazon or something.
My goodness.
But you also have to wonder what kind of sicko, if someone gets in a car on accident, would it just be like, oh, you're in my car on accident, can you get out?
That has happened to people where people have.
Yeah,
I jumped into the car. And remember that one time I was at the library and that woman ran up
yeah.
to my car?
She thought you were like Uber.
Or something. I don't know what she thought. But yeah.
You just be like, oh, you're in the wrong car. Can you
yeah.
please get out?
Yeah.
But you also had the child lock on as well. And they said if you get into a Uber, you should see, I think it's if it's up, the child lock is off. If it's down, the child lock is on. So you should check that as well before you get into a Uber. Also, as someone said on Twitter, if your friend is drunk, don't leave them at the place because her friends left her there. That's why she called a Uber, apparently.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. Her friends, from what we understand,
yeah.
may have left her there.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is the case,
mm-hmm.
we, as a friend, like people always say, if we came together, we're going to leave together.
Exactly.
And I think that's what people should do
mm-hmm.
with their friends. If you came, no, you're not leaving with somebody else. We came here together, we're going to leave together. If you want to be with somebody or go off with somebody else after I drop you off at home, they can come pick you up.
Exactly.
But yeah. Yeah. That's sad.
But very sad. Very interesting case as well. Because mm-hmm. I've heard about it a lot before. I just didn't realize it was in Minnesota. For some reason, I thought it was like in Iowa or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also very close. We're actually thinking for our cases, we might start doing like Iowa and Wisconsin.
Since we're so close.
They're so close. Yeah. And Tony is originally from Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense.
Yeah. And maybe even Canada.
Mm-hmm. Because Canada is just mm-hmm. right there.
Yeah. We may even be doing that and more interstate
mm-hmm.
cases
if
also.
If we should do it where if it's connected to yes. us, then we can do it.
Yes. Yes. Because we came across some crimes that we thought was very interesting that we wanted to do, and it's in neighboring states. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's what we planned on doing too.
Because even like the Versace murder, the guy originally killed two people here in Minnesota, and then he went and killed Versace. So that's very interesting. So even cases like that where two murders here and then other murders someplace else, that makes sense as well.
That sounds good. Yes, yep. We are going to do that.
Yep. So we're going to close up.
Yes.
We're going to ramble it on.
Yes. But we're going to close up and say what we always say at the end, that we only focus on notorious crimes in Minnesota, but remember, there's notorious crimes everywhere.